The detainees' parents' committee in occupied Jerusalem said Israeli soldiers invaded Ras Al Amud neighborhood in Silwan and Al Isawiya town, stormed and seared several homes and kidnapped 7 children. Soldiers also invaded Karyut village near the northern West Bank city of Nablus, broke into and violently searched homes and kidnapped 3 Palestinians. Furthermore, dozens of military vehicles invaded the villages of Deir Sharaf, Zawarta, Beit Iba, west of Nablus, broke into homes and searched them and kidnapped 2 men. In the southern West Bank district of Hebron, soldiers invaded various communities, searched homes and kidnapped 5 Palestinians, including a father and his son. In addition, soldiers installed roadblocks on various main roads leading to Yatta town, Al-Fuwar refugee camp and Sa'ir town and Halhul bridge north of Hebron city, stopped and searched dozens of cars and examined the ID cards of the passengers while interrogating them. 2 more Palestinians have been kidnapped in the northern West Bank city of Jenin after the soldiers invaded and ransacked their homes. In central West Bank district of Ramallah, soldiers invaded Beit Rima town northwest of Ramallah city and kidnapped 2 Palestinians. In related news, soldiers kidnapped 2 Palestinians allegedly after crossing the border fence with Gaza. The army said that the soldiers searched the 2 Palestinians, who were unarmed, and moved them to interrogation center. At the political level, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu voted on Monday that if re-elected, he will build thousands of settler homes in occupied East Jerusalem to prevent future concession to Palestinians. Speaking ahead of Tuesday's general election on a tour of Har Huma, a continuous settlement neighborhood of annexed East Jerusalem, the PM vowed that he will never allow Palestinians to establish a capital in the city's eastern sector. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, March 16th, 2015 News Roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Don Zer, Ken Yoshikawa, Rosalind Scott, and Joanna Peterson. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer is Daniel Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR, Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Rosalind Scott.
And I'm Robert Barncourt. And here's what's coming up tomorrow morning, Tuesday, on KBOO from 7 to 8 a.m. It'll be Democracy Now!, a news magazine hosted by award-winning journalists Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. At 9 o'clock, Alternative Radio will feature author and economist Richard Wolff on 21st Century Capitalism. At 10 a.m., hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and news with host Chris Andre. Stay tuned at 10:15 for Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 a.m., it'll be stage and studio. On the program tomorrow, DMA Roberts features the healing spirit of performance with two very different groups. One is Well Arts Institute with their new show, Fierce Love, about parents of kids with cerebral palsy. Later in the show, DMA talks with a member of the Oregon Falun Dafa Association, which will present Shen Yun Performing Arts at the Keller Auditorium at the end of the month. And following that at 11:30, KBOO will have Art Focus. And now, stay tuned for KBOO News in Depth. Good night, Rosalind.
Good night, Robert. Good night, Danielle.
Good night, Danielle.
KABU News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
We are joined on the line by Nathan Wessler. He is a staff attorney from the American Civil Liberties Union.
About dozens or hundreds or maybe even thousands of completely innocent bystanders' phones as well.
Wow. And how is this actually legal? It seems like it would be a direct violation of the Fourth Amendment and probably other laws as well.
Yeah, I mean, it looks a whole lot like the kind of dragnet search that the framers of the Fourth Amendment were so concerned about when they drafted our Bill of Rights. Now, at the very least, at a minimum, police should be going to a judge, demonstrating probable cause, explaining exactly what this device does and what its privacy implications are, and getting a warrant. But we know that in many places around the country where police are using this device, they've not been getting warrants. Sometimes they don't go to a judge at all. Sometimes they go to a judge, but they don't provide full information about what they're doing, and they get an order on a much lower standard, a relevant standard, instead of probable cause, which is really the gold standard under the Constitution.
And is there a national standard, or is this going state by state? Because I understand that state and local law enforcement are using this technology as well.
Yeah, you know, it started out 20 or so years ago as something that the military and intelligence agencies were using, and then it filtered out to federal law enforcement, the FBI, the U.S. Marshals Service, and others. But now we've seen it across the country in the hands of state and local police departments in our local communities, you know, from New York to Florida, Alaska to California, Washington, Idaho. You know, it's really proliferated. And there are not good standards out there that police are following with any regularity. In fact, there's been just extreme and very difficult secrecy surrounding even basic facts about how often these devices are used by our local police, what the legal standard is that they think applies, and what kind of privacy protections they may or may not have in place.
And I know that your group, the ACLU, came together with Wikimedia to file a lawsuit against the NSA for spying. Is there anything in the works for this type of surveillance technology as far as lawsuits are concerned?
Well, we continue to work in states around the country seeking more information, so filing public records requests, and we've started to file lawsuits to enforce some of those when police departments refuse to give us information. And we're also working with defense attorneys around the country to help them identify cases where their clients might have been surveilled with one of these Stingray devices and to help them make arguments under the Fourth Amendment about why evidence may be tainted by that and may need to be thrown out.
Well, and just to reiterate on the technology itself, I mean, it seems pretty science fiction that people would have their cell phone kind of hijacked by these fake towers. Can you explain how this works, say, if I am using a cell phone and driving along a highway?
Yeah, you know, normally when we're using a cell phone and driving around, that phone will, you know, be talking to a real cell phone tower owned by AT&T or Sprint or T-Mobile, whoever our provider is. And as you move around an area from the area of one tower to another, the phone gets handed off, or the call gets handed off between them. What Stingrays do is they send out a signal that overpowers the signals from the actual cell towers and tells the phone, connect to me instead, and also tells the phone to report back with its identifying information. You know, one feature of these devices is that they can actually end up interfering with people's actual cell phone calls. They can result in dropped calls or blocked calls. Because your phone is now communicating with a fake tower instead of with a tower that's actually part of the cell phone network.
And is the use of this technology on the rise around the U.S.?
It certainly is. You know, we still have lots to learn about how much it's being used, but we know, for example, that at least 48 state and local law enforcement agencies spread out across 20 states and the District of Columbia have purchased their own Stingray devices. We know that many more are borrowing them from federal agencies or from state police or neighboring jurisdictions. And we know some information about how often they're being used in some places. In up in Tacoma, Washington, for example, we know that there were almost 200 different investigations where they had used this device. And these are not, as the government sometimes would like to suggest, you know, high-value counterterrorism operations or anything like that. Mostly drug crimes and all the other kinds of run-of-the-mill criminal investigations that our local police are expected to deal with. So, you know, the use is really widespread, and it's quite frequent in some places.
And there's no way to know if your cell phone has been hijacked by one of these fake towers?
That's right. It's completely surreptitious. There's no way to know that your phone is connected to a real tower or to a device that's masquerading as a tower.
Wow. And so you said that that you're trying to see what can be done about this. It seems like a lot of people would sign on to a lawsuit if one were to take place. Are there any class action type of lawsuits maybe in the works?
Well, you know, one challenge of trying to oppose through the courts this kind of surveillance program is the very secrecy that the government insists on surrounding it with. In order to bring a lawsuit, generally you need to be able to show that you've been the subject of the surveillance. But as long as the government works so hard to keep secret what it's doing, it's very hard for somebody to figure out whether they might have been in an area where a Stingray was being used, even if they weren't the actual target of the investigation. You know, the government certainly is not providing notification to people whose phones get swept up in one of these dragnets.
And it could be anyone. It doesn't have to be someone who is necessarily on a watch list or something like this?
That's right. I mean, one way that police frequently use these devices is if they're looking for a particular suspect's phone, but they don't know where that suspect is. They're trying to track that person down. They might drive around a neighborhood or a section of a city with one of these devices operating out of a police car until they find the signal from that phone, and then they drive in smaller and smaller circles until they pinpoint where that phone is. The problem is that the whole time they're driving around, they're not only forcing that phone to communicate its information, but they're also sweeping up all the other phones in the area, too, that are reporting back their unique electronic serial number. And then by virtue of that, police know where they are and who's there.
Wow. So the Stingray technology is in itself very disturbing. There were other technologies that Edward Snowden talked about, like VME Dominator, that can capture calls and texts, control an intercepted phone, and actually turn on a powered down phone and use it as a bug. Have you looked into that VME Dominator technology?
You know, I have not done work around that technology. You know, I think one thing that the Stingray technology shows, though, is that, you know, devices and methods that at one point were the domain of national security agencies have started to filter out to our local police. You know, that's true with these Stingray cell phone tracking devices, but it's also, you know, I'm sure going to be true soon with other kinds of technology. We know some police departments are using radar devices that can see through the walls of homes to identify whether people are inside and where they are. We know that in many cities around the country, there are networks of automated license plate readers that create a log of where every car drove and when. Networks of surveillance cameras are set up in many cities, and some of them are starting to experiment with facial recognition technology. So there are any number of surveillance technologies that are filtering out to our local police. And that's really why it's so crucial that local elected government officials and people in communities are trying to keep an eye on what our tax dollars are going for and trying to make sure that there are reasonable limits on how the police forces do their job.
But if the use of this technology is legal under things like the USA Patriot Act, will there need to be a legislation in order to curb the use of this type of technology and protect people's civil liberties?
Yeah, legislation through state legislatures and even in city councils can be one of the most effective and fastest ways to get some of these surveillance technologies under control. And in fact, the Washington state legislature is now considering a bill that would set really strict and reasonable limits on stingray use to make clear that a warrant is required, to make clear that the government must do everything it can to avoid collecting information about innocent bystanders, and if it captures that information, it has to delete it as soon as possible, and some other restrictions. The Virginia legislature just earlier this month passed legislation similarly requiring a warrant for stingray use. So we're hoping that more state legislatures around the country will follow their suit.
Anything to be done at the federal level as far as legislation?
Absolutely. You know, Congress is a slow place to try to get things done these days, but there have been a number of members of the U.S. Senate and the House who have raised concerns about stingray technology and other forms of surveillance gear. And so we're watching closely to see whether that turns into legislation or oversight hearings, but there certainly could be a role for Congress.
Well, and we will continue to follow this issue and the use of this stingray technology and other forms of technology used by the CIA, the NSA, and local and state law enforcement in order to create and intercept cell phone create fake cell phone towers to intercept cell phone traffic and, in some occasions, actually control cell phones. Nathan Wessler has joined us today. He is the staff attorney for the American Civil Liberties Union. Nathan, thank you for joining us on KBOO today.
Thank you.
This is Jinka Soderberg with KBOO News.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Last Days in Vietnam, a film screening on Thursday, March 19th at Concordia University in Portland. Last Days in Vietnam is a new documentary from Rory Kennedy, which examines the final days of American presence in Saigon and the efforts taken to evacuate 135,000 South Vietnamese. Again, that's Last Days in Vietnam, Thursday, March 19th at 6 p.m. at the Hagen Building at Concordia University, 2811 Northeast Holman Street in Portland. More information